Welcome back. Well, we have discovered another Earth-like in size exoplanet. It's just a hop, skip, and a jump from us in cosmic terms. The nearest alien planet to our solar system, Proxima b, or Proxima b, is a mere 17% larger in mass than Earth. The new findings come courtesy of a spectrographic device known as ESPRESSO, mounted at ESO's Very Large Telescope in Chile. It was first discovered 4 years ago. The exoplanet has been measured to be in the habitable zone of its star, Proxima Centauri, a red dwarf that's dimmer and smaller than our sun. Yet, Proxima b is about 20 times closer to its star than Earth is to the sun, so it could receive comparable energy. Scientists are pondering whether the alien world might harbor liquid water and possible life, but because the planet is heavily bombarded by X-rays from its sun, it would need a protective atmosphere to shield it. And you can read more about this story and see the artist's rendering of Proxima or Proxima b in the highlight carousel up at coasttocoastam.com. And coming up on Coast to Coast tonight, Monday morning, or Monday night into Tuesday morning, George Norrie welcomes the astrologer William Stickivers, who specializes in archetypal financial and geopolitical astrology. He'll share his thoughts on blockchain currencies and instability in the stock market, as well as planetary alignments that are shifting dramatically and involve the pandemic and the response to it, technology, including 5G, China, and Hong Kong. He'll also explain how short-lived global unraveling repeats every 100 years, followed by major rebirth and renaissance. In the second half, George welcomes British multidisciplinary scientific research Bruce Fenton, a guest or an expert on the History Channel's Ancient Aliens. He'll discuss his theories of human evolution as well as his latest work on hybrid humans, the result of extraterrestrial genetic manipulation. That's tonight, Monday night into Tuesday morning on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. Back to more of my conversation with demonologist Nathaniel Gillis, plus your calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. Nathaniel Gillis is with us. We'll also take some phone calls, questions, and comments regarding demonology. Nathaniel, before the break, we were talking about soul hunters, and you were describing how the role of exorcist and midwife attending the birth of a child had been reversed. Did you want to finish up with that, or should we move on?
Absolutely. Absolutely, I would. I would love to discuss that because it gets deeper than we could ever imagine. Matter of fact, I would point everybody to Genesis 6 and mention and ask, you know, how many times have we read that passage and we skip right over the fact that one of the first things that these entities taught their wives was metallurgy. And scholars for a millennium now, we've tried to figure out what that was, what was the form that they were taught, what was the point of it, what was the process. And it wasn't until we got a hold of what are called the Emar texts in ancient Mesopotamia that we saw what this metallurgy form was, and it was implemented by the exorcist and the midwife. There were bands of iron, rings of iron that they would place upon the woman. It was ligatures, and so in the case of if they thought that the baby was going to be born prematurely, that they would close the legs of the pregnant woman and put the bands of iron on them. And they believe that the magnetic nature of those bands had the ability to keep the baby inside. Vice versa, if they wanted it out and thought that, you know, it's been in the womb for too long, again, it's a wild phenomenon. But here's my point. If they reversed their roles and instead of helping these people, they killed the baby on the inside, if they completely rebelled against their natures, then we ought to find that in the Bible, and we do. We find it in Psalms 107, where David, the very first exorcist that ever lived in biblical antiquity, he talks about those who are bound in chains of iron, and he makes a list of these victims that these soul hunters have taken the lives of. And I will tell everybody this, that these entities are looking for social skins, and the whole theory that these people had positioned their manifestations in or whatnot, what they believed was that these victims were also bound in rings of metal. And my point in this is this, guys, possession, the test run, doesn't end and begin with possession and exorcism. Father Sinistrari had a deceased person who was a victim of an incubus encounter, and the entity had carved scarifications underneath her eyelids. So before we even begin what is a demon and all this, it's a profound moment to understand here, guys. We are dealing with soul hunters who could slip in the middle night, in the middle of the night, and kill somebody. And watch this. This is also interesting. These soul hunters that are the exorcists and the midwives, they operate with a serial killer's mindset. Their victimology in Ezekiel 13 was that they would go into the nighttime hour in the most vulnerable position in someone's home. They would take the life of the person. Then they would cut a piece of their flesh off and sew it like a sackcloth, like a veil, a garment on their own skin. And again, like I said before, we're dealing with social skins here. I would suggest everybody, if you went into Ezekiel 13, read that passage in the Septuagint, and it says that these entities were creating what they called, literally, an external soul. Now, at first blush, I didn't know what that meant. The hair on the back of my neck stood up, Richard. But I went back and started going into mythology and folklore and found a book called The Golden Bow by James Frazier. He's another anthropologist. I'm a big fan of his. But he talks about how these warriors in antiquity, these warriors, the Nephilim, these warriors, what they would do is they would run. They, in order to save their soul, their life, they would bounce from body to body to body. Whenever that body died, it died just after they had left it so that their soul could survive. Now, here's the issue. In the Bible, we see that mentioned. We didn't see it. We didn't notice it because we're thinking with a Western mind. But when the spies went into Canaan and they said, we were to them as grasshoppers, that's a mistranslation. They said, we were to them as locusts. Now, we would think of that and say, okay, oh my God, it's a grasshopper or what's a locust? No. What we're looking at is when a locust molts his skin, it will look like a locust, but it's not the locust. Does it make sense? Again, that's the language here. Yes. The bouncing from different social skins. Now, in Ezekiel 13, Yahweh levels an accusation against them. And I want to preface that with this. We have, and even in Mesopotamia, in the Akkadian text, and the Hebrew text, we have what's called a blood redeemer. And that's not the kinsman redeemer for all the theologians out there. It's different. It's singular, but it's much more profound. The blood redeemer is someone who shows up into a city, and he avenges the blood guilt of a family member. Now, here's what's profound about this. These souls who are in prison, they're captured. The Bible says they're captured in bands of iron. He says this. He says, okay, first of all, he says, I'm going to come and I'm going to avenge you. This is in Psalms 107. Now, the blood redeemer goes out, and because he's kin, because he's a warrior, he's related to them, he has the ability to fight on their behalf. Here's the issue. We had no one to fight on our behalf. So what he did is he bought us with his own blood so that now he can fulfill the right of being a blood redeemer. Does that make sense?
It does. It does, yes.
So what we're dealing with here are entities. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. You continue thought. Then I have a question here. Go ahead. Okay. Finish that thought.
So what we're dealing with here is essentially the UFO abduction phenomenon, where these entities are absolutely 100% interested in the afterbirth and fetuses. So if we get into exorcistic rites, even if you go into Islamic tradition, one of their very first questions, if the person's possessed, it's fascinating. They say, have you had a dream where you had intercourse with a person in the dream. If they say yes, the very next question is, then have you had a dream that you were pregnant because of it? And again, guys, these are one and the same. The metallurgy that we're witnessing are bands of iron. They're just a lot larger. And so when we encounter these UFO abduction, they're seeing two types. They're seeing the exorcist, and they're seeing the midwife in every case.
The offspring or the product of this necromancy, they're walking around living lives. Are they the psychopaths that we often talk about that run the world or seem to run the world?
I don't know. I think that the closest rendition I can find to these entities is a serial killer. The way they think, the way they will take it, they'll victimize a person and then take something from them as a trophy. And there's the pathologies there, the victimologies there, and the way that they will groom their victims. I mean, if you guys want, you can look up Montague Summers and Father Sinister of Amino. It's a gross darkness that we're fighting. But to answer that question, I do not know. I do not know.
Well, what would happen if you were to take the DNA of a serial killer, human mother, what would the... That would be the mitochondrial DNA. What would the nuclear DNA, the paternal lineage show? Is it human?
I think that the grooming has to be there. Even if, okay, watch this. Even if it's not psychologically, like you said, there's a biological essence to this. And there are scholars, and we've debated this for a while now, in terms of people who will, you know, dig up the bones of giants and look for the certain DNA. And I believe that is relevant. It's germane to the field. But again, we're not looking at this in the sense of what it was. It was literally putting a spirit in a body. See, again, an idol is an image without a spirit. A ghost is a spirit without a body. And what Yahweh told them was that you're taking the lives of the innocent to keep themselves. Now watch this, they're the guilty ones. They're trying to keep themselves alive. And in the end, what's fascinating also is just like an exorcist will pull a spirit out of a person, that's not what Yahweh says. In Ezekiel 13, he says, I'm not gonna pull your spirit out of the flesh that you've created around you. I'm gonna pull the flesh off of your spirit. What a profound statement to make.
Let's go to the phones, and let's see. Henry is in North Hollywood on the Wild Card line. Henry, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Great show tonight. Hey, you know, I just wanted to throw past you. I feel that I'm a targeted individual from this exact hunter organization that likes to go after souls. Mm-hmm. When I started my Coast to Coast fandom, I didn't believe in the soul stuff. I was really a hardcore atheist and kind of like a wannabe Christian. I just kind of did the Christian thing for academia. And the deeper I go, it seems that this soul thing is the number one hot commodity out in space. And it's just my opinion that the soul was like an invention for deep space travel, and people are abusing it. It's like a weaponized soul, and, you know, they use people's bodies and chemicals and all sorts of stuff, and they like to really torture you. But I found it, reading into this, that they do it not just for, like, power, but it can, like, make their fate change, like they get... I'd hate to say like a demigod's blessing of higher God, but how do these people use it to manifest their will or kind of change the dimensions? I've heard some weird stuff like people being able to get chopped up in pieces, re-embody themselves, Jesus walking on water, and my favorite, molecular duplication. And just if you want to throw this past this, reports of time travelers and other people's like bodies getting reprogrammed by computer codes, and how the Torah kind of matches up with this, and how the DNA really, you know, can be used as a computer. Just your thoughts on modifying the whole thing, because it seems like this sort of technology is going to come down to common people.
All right, Henry, thank you for that. Wow, he threw everything at you, including the kitchen sink, Nathaniel.
That's good stuff, though. I love it. Thank you for that. Yeah, I love it.
Well, did you have any thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. 100% I do. I have a lot. There was a lot in that question. Yeah, absolutely. To answer this question, it was the earliest theologian we know of that began to formulate an idea of why it is that these entities are after, especially blood, specifically blood. And they believed, it's an ancient Semitic belief, that the life was in the blood, like literally, the soul is the blood. And so it was Origen that said that concerning these demons who would want animal sacrifices and blood rituals done, they said that because their souls are naked, again, they want a garment, a skin to them. They said that in order for them to help materialize more to where it's not just a full apparition, but it's themselves, that, you know, they're back alive again in a sense. In order to do that, that they had to take the blood of an innocent victim. And again, this is where the warfare is, guys. This is not small potatoes here. This is far darker than any midnight of man's imagination. This isn't folklore. It's not science fiction. This is real stuff. Yahweh said they'll slip into your room at nighttime. Hello, UFO abduction. They'll give you a dream and tell you what it means. Hello, screen memory. They'll take you. And again, if you go back to Dr. Carla Turner's work, Masquerade of Angels, she talks about how she had an abductee who was not complying with their wishes. And they pointed to another version of her in the corner of the room and said, God, it's chilling. They said, if you don't comply with us, we'll take you out and replace you with another you, and your family will not know the difference. Again, Apocalypse of John, they created copies of bodies. It's the shell. It's the locust that molted. And sometimes we could be looking at the molted version, thinking it's a fascinating subject. I don't want to ramble.
No, not at all. It is fascinating. Who do they choose? Who are their victims?
I don't know. I'm still looking up the victimology here. It's hard to say. I know that it's very unique. It's unique to their own choices and their own tastes. I do know that they follow the bloodline of people. So if you have someone who was abducted, chances are either their parents were abducted or their children will be abducted. And in Christianity, again, in demonology, we call that a generational curse or generational spirit who attaches itself to the biological bloodline of families. And through that, he will choose his victimology. But in terms of why it is they choose who they choose, I'm still working on that.
If you're a drug abuser or an alcoholic, are you more vulnerable?
Absolutely, yeah. And again, it's these entities will first appear as attachments, and you know, it could come from an unhealthy curiosity in the occult or a blood ritual or something. Even if you don't intend on it being as damaging as it will be, they will use that as a way of consent. And I tell everybody this, that I talk to who are interested in this field, especially possession, before you conform to it, it will conform to you. And the idea here is that it's not just voices that you hear. It's not just he will wear you as a cloth, like as a garment of skin. The idea is to confuse your thoughts with their thoughts so that when it wants to gather itself and when it wants to do, to act on something, that you will have no concept. You will misunderstand. You'll think its thoughts are your thoughts, and you will not know the difference.
All right, Nathaniel. Got to jump in here. We'll take a quick time out, come back, take some calls. Nathaniel Gillis. And if you like what you're hearing tonight and you want to find out more about what I do and how you can listen to some of my other projects, go to my website, strangeplanet.ca. Strangeplanet.ca. That's your portal to my weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show, which airs on Zoomer Radio Sunday nights out of Toronto. My podcast, Conspiracy Unlimited, can also be found at the website, Conspiracy Unlimited. My YouTube channel, my Strange Planet shop, it's all there, strangeplanet.ca. Register at strangeplanet.ca and you'll receive my free monthly newsletter Inner Sanctum, strangeplanet.ca. Got a demon problem? Your call is next when Coast to Coast AM returns. Nathaniel, not surprisingly, we have a full bank of phone calls. How about for you? How's the demon business? Are people calling you round the clock?
No, not really. I do get a lot of emails, and most of the time, it's mostly just case studies. You know, mostly when I get into cases, it's either a murder case or it's a demonic haunting. Other than that, I've pretty much prepared myself to researching and writing and helping people with their cases in terms of, like, you know, actual investigators. Yeah.
How did you get involved in a murder case that involves demonology?
Well, I had a case that was a murder case. It was very intense. It was, I don't want to get too detailed because it's still an ongoing case in terms of the law, but essentially there was a 15-year-old girl that was possessed with a male entity, and she went into a house and began just stabbing anybody that she could see. And as she was stabbing, there was a cackle and a male laughing through her body. And so when I got called in, it was really just to help the family get the entity out. They had been seeing shadow figures, orbs at night, and just different manifestations. They really couldn't even grieve. They couldn't even grieve the loss of the mother, who was, you know, she transitioned from the attack. So when I went in there, we cornered the entity upstairs in a closet, and it turns out that it was the father-in-law. It was the father of the actual victim, who was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And at that point, my systematic demonology I grew up with just fell apart, because I'm looking for horns and hooves and not this entity. But yeah, so that's, if I get involved, it's because it's almost sort of like a specialty for me, in a sense. But so I don't do a ton of cases every year. They're very specialized and they're unique.
All right, let's go to the international line. John is up here in Canada. John, welcome to Coast. Go ahead. We lost John. Okay. Wildcard line, George is in Texas. George, good morning. Go ahead.
Hello, Richard. To your guest, my question is about order. What kind of, I'll give an example. Christ was immaculately conceived, as the Bible says, or in those souls. And so he's from aka an interdimensional being, and impregnated Mary, the Virgin Mary. So my question is higher dimensionals being at the very top, then you have beings from other, let's say there's aliens like little green men, whatever you want to call them, other worlds, and they have their souls too. And then we have humanity. Mm-hmm. And then you have reincarnated souls from humanity, and then from, it could be these other beings. What is the order in what you that these malevolent beings you're talking about, sir? I mean, is there interdimensionals at the very top, but they're malevolent? Of course, you're only talking about malevolency, which is
right,
all evil. So Christ being good, and all these other religious figures that were good according to their beliefs, people's beliefs. Tell me the order of all these things, and I'll take my question out off on the radio. And thanks, Richard. I love your show, Stranger Planet.
Thank you, George.
Yes, sir. To answer that question, awesome question. I don't know the order. I think that to prove that there would be an order, I would have to look into, are there certain cases of reincarnation, which I think in my research, I think it's almost inevitable that you will see it happening. I don't know that order yet. I don't know. And maybe that is something that I will get into in the future. But amazing question. Thank you for asking that. And maybe one day I'll have that for you.
How do we protect ourselves, Nathaniel?
Protect your mind. Protect your mind. Don't invite them in. Don't, especially, I'm not a big proponent of a Ouija board. Don't go out there looking for anybody named Ted. Like, I'm not saying that Ted's a demon or anything. I'm just saying that that's a big door that you're opening up. Just asking, especially, even if you're just looking for a deceased ancestor and you ask for a certain name, anybody from that name can show up, and not all of them are going to be nice. So I would stay away from substance abuse. Substance abuse is one of their easiest ways to gain consent within you. And sooner or later, that attachment will become you, and you will have no idea who's speaking. Is it, you know, speaking through you? Are those your thoughts or theirs? And at that point in time, again, it's a test game, because at any point in time, it'll go from hearing voices to commands, and then it will wear you. And when it does what it wants to do through you, again, you'll be like the skin that a locust leaves. It'll shed you. And you'll be sitting there holding a knife, or you'll be sitting there doing something that you would have otherwise never done. And it would all, and if you trace the footsteps, the breadcrumbs, it'll always go back to small portions of consent that we have yielded over to these entities over time.
East of the Rockies, Joe is in Maryland. Good morning, Joe. Welcome to Coast. You're on the line with Nathaniel Gillis. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. How you doing? Great show.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question for you. Okay, you have all these evil entities out there, and we have all the angels who didn't rebel from God. And Nathaniel, you had, you know, your guardian angel there and stuff like that, and the entities didn't physically attack you, but they scared you half to death. And you said you prayed, and that presence came in there, and you felt a sign of relief, but they tortured you for 8 years. I mean,
yes, sir.
Now, what are the angels who didn't rebel from God doing? I mean, you were praying, you know, do something, do something, do something. And they kept them at bay and stuff, but you're allowed to be tortured for 8 years. It's not like you didn't physically ask Yahweh, please save me, please, because you did.
Right.
But you were tortured. How come that the good angels aren't doing more when people are asking? And like you said, there have to be, you know, exorcisms, and sometimes they take days and days and days to get rid of the demon. How come they're not being more proactive when people are asking, please save me, please save me, please save me?
It's a good question. I can answer it, I guess, uniquely to my situation. I think the teacher, in my case, the teacher was silent when the test was taken. And I think that it was a test to me. It was to help me build up an immunity so that later on in my life and my calling, when I did encounter similar malevolent entities, that I didn't run away from it, you know, that it would run away from me in a sense. Does it make sense?
But all those people who are tortured by it, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And you read the cases about it, like in the Vatican and things like that. I mean, some of the people were like really holy people and things like that, but they were tortured beyond belief. I mean, why are they subject to that?
I don't know.
Well, that's the age-old question. Why does God allow good people to suffer? That's a huge question.
That's a good question. I know that there's a second category there, which I have actually encountered, and I'm not saying they're all in this manner, but I had a case where a young man, I don't know if it was full on possession, but there would be a presence that would take over his body and mind, and he would change. And I said, you know, I can come and help you. And I said, I want to, I know I can. It's like a 2 or 3 hour drive from where I was living. And I said, I have a question. Do you really want help? Because his mother had called me, not him. So I said, do you really want assistance with this? And this is what he said. He said, well, he goes, I don't know if I really want it gone. I said, why? And he said, because whenever it possesses me, I can look at people and I can know more about them than I usually do. And some people, for whatever reason, the stage of consent has skyrocketed into a covenant with these entities, where at first the entity will make you feel more than human. And then when it's done with you, it'll treat you less, like less than human. And so it's not just, you know, there's tacit agreements involved here. And like I said before, that's not a blanketed statement for them, but I'm certain that there are people that fall into that category as well.
Wildcard line again. Katie is in Idaho. Katie, welcome to Coast.
Thank you for taking my call very much. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Well, the question is this. A little background. When I was a child, I was ill frequently, and I would run a high fever. Mm-hmm. And I had what was called, they called it fever dreams. And in these dreams, I was being pursued, not by one, but several entities of some kind. And I would run around the house wild-eyed, screaming. And my parents were shocked, and my brothers would, everybody would wake up and come up and try to settle me down. And I was just horrified and mm-hmm. terrorized. So my mother decided to have me baptized. And I was baptized. My brother was my sponsor, my older brother, and I was 5 years old. And after that, whether it was a physical or spiritual or a combination, I didn't have these dreams anymore.
Right.
So I believe, to my belief system, the Lord Jesus Christ saw my danger and the baptismal ceremony, the sacrament, protected mm-hmm. me from these entities. Now, they were not, they were pursuing me. And I felt when I was a child that I was running for my life mm-hmm. and that I was going to be killed. That's how terrorized I was. Does this fit in at all with your thesis about these demonic entities? And I will take my answer off the line. Thank you very much.
All right, Katie, thank you for that.
Yes, to answer the question, baptism in its first origin, like when it first originated, was a rite of exorcism. Always. It's in the Hebrew, it's called a mikvah. And it was essentially was to take something that was dirty, dip it in the water. When it comes out of the water, it's clean. So that's why in Genesis, after Genesis 6, God basically baptized the world with water. The idea is, the Semitic tradition is that water represents what they would call Sheol, the land, the world of the dead. And so whatever should not be alive in or on you, once you go under the water, it stays there, and you resurrect out of it. And so that's also out of Numbers. It's out of Leviticus. It's dealing with some of what's called the purity laws in the Torah. Specifically, if you have an unclean spirit, which is tuma ruah, literally a spirit that you got, or someone would get from touching the dead. It's a deceased entity, is what the context is. But absolutely, that would be a rite of exorcism. That's why priests throw holy water. They'll tell you that. And the be gone Satan, why do I throw holy water? To remind the entity of a baptism. And again, my other question with systematic demonology is, when was a demon ever baptized? If it's a fallen angel, it makes no sense to me. But yes, that was a rite of exorcism, and it's a profound statement of faith, and I myself have been baptized.
Katie, thank you for that. Do exorcisms work? And if they do, which form of exorcism is most effective?
Exorcisms do work. I would say all of them, but for different reasons. So if you went back to the 16th century, which scholars call the age of the demoniac, you have Isaac Luria, Kabbalistic exorcist, who would take people who were possessed, and he would figure out through dialogue what kind of entity was in the person. So like one day, Jaime Vital, for instance, had a dream. And in the dream, a student of his who had died came to him and said, "Listen, master, tomorrow I will come to you for assistance." And so the next day, he didn't really think much about it. The next day, Jaime Vital is getting ready for bed. You know, it's an uneventful day for the most part. And he turns his lights off. Next thing you know, he gets a knock at the door. He walks out. There is a little girl with her mother. The little girl walks up to him and says, "Hello, master. I told you I would come." So there are rites of exorcism, but his rituals included having a discussion with the entity. Why? And he would always introduce and ask, "What's your statement of intent? Who are you? Why are you here?" how did you get consent to be within the person's body? And it was more or less a form of psychotherapy where he would talk to the attachment by talking to that which it was attached to, the person. Now, the Catholic ritual, because, again, in the 16th century, they were also revitalizing their demonology. And in the 16th century, you have what, you know, they throw holy water, and they quote different ritualistic texts, and that's fine. But, again, here's my question. It's not about the rate of success. It's about the reason for it. And that's really where my work is going as well. And I'm, you know, hopefully we'll one day I'll get an answer.
All right. Let's grab a real quick one here from Daryl in Florida on the first time caller line. Daryl, welcome.
Thank you. First time caller, avid listener.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Daryl.
Yes, sir.
Nathan, you refer to the watchers.
Mm-hmm.
Are they demons, or are there a UFO entity mm-hmm. that watches the planet?
We've got about two minutes here, Nathaniel.
I want to make sure I understand the question. Is there a UFO entity watching the thing? Is that what you said? I'm sorry.
Watching our planet, our progress,
if UFOs are watchers.
Okay. Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That's a very good question. The term the Watcher, again, it was a functional term that they borrowed, that ancient Judaism, not really Judaism, but the Old Testament authors borrowed from the Akkadian text. They were the Apkallu. And at first thought, they thought that they were semi-divine, but not in the sense of an angel who went and married and interbred with children of men, but in the sense of a deceased ancestor who he didn't go from high to below. He went from below high. In other words, he ascended. He's an ascended master, basically. To answer your question, I do believe that these entities that did rebel and reverse their roles were watchers. And if these are the entities I'm referring to, and I do believe they are, then yes, they would be still watching, specifically the earth, our roots, are trees. Why? Because a lot of the rituals they're performing in UFO abduction cases, they cannot do them without portions of the earth in terms of spices and herbs. But to answer your question, yes, sir.
Daryl, thank you for that. All right, we are out of time. Nathaniel, how do people get a hold of you?
Well, my website is njgillis.com. It's G-I-L-L-I-S. I am on Instagram, Facebook, just Nathaniel J. Gillis. And like I said, I'm not really doing too many in-home cases right now because I'm doing more research into this phenomenon and writing my book on demonology. But that's how you get a hold of me. And I'm so humbled and honored to be on Coast to Coast again. I'm such a big fan. And I hope you guys hope you enjoyed it as much as I did.
It was a fascinating 2 hours, a wild ride. Nathaniel, thank you so much. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galante, Chris Burrows, Lex Lone Hood, Michael Cozio, and Marlene Sray, in Toronto, Paul Gatt, and in Brantford, Ontario, Scott Guitar Flicks, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. Until June 12th, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.